Sheffield slapped her across the face. Bitch!
Please, no!
Colette whimpered, knowing that was what he liked to hear. Laughing, the Baron grabbed her by the throat and squeezed until she thought he was really going to kill her. Panic struck and she tried to escape, but it was hopeless now. He was much stronger and driven mad with lust. Slapping her again, Sheffield simply shoved himself painfully deep inside her and started to thrust. Colette could only make inarticulate noises as he brutally assaulted her, and she knew there was worse coming. Much worse. When Colette was Baron someday, all of the men in her ville would be in chains and neutered, castrated, sexless animals used only to draw water, pull plows, and be used as target practice. Horrid, filthy things, they should all die in screaming agony. Sheffield shouted at the slaves. Instantly, the girls rushed forward to assist the Baron. Each grabbed an arm and held Colette to the table. Sheffield could barely speak. Sex with Colette was so good it actually hurt sometimes. He grunted and squeezed her hips, pounding harder, sweat dripping onto her chest. The two hearts pounded in his chest, and he wondered if this was why they got along so well. A soft explosion sounded from outside the armory, somewhere to the west. One of the slaves looked to the door, her eyes wide in terror.
Just a landmine. Another mutie must have exploded.
Soon. Oh yes, soon, my lord. Soon!
Wisps of steam rising all around her, Mildred stood in the kitchen, using a wooden spoon to stir the contents of a huge stainless steel pot on the main military stove. The grayish fluid bubbled steadily and gave off a pleasant aroma.
How's it coming?
The boy dropped into a chair and tried not to drool at the prospect of eating.
Pretty soon.
The physician sprinkled some salt into the brew. No matter how well stripped a larder may be, there always seemed to be salt left behind. Nobody ever thought of taking the big container.
This is purely survival food. It'll keep us alive, but I can't guarantee the flavor. However, it's all we have at the present.
Lugging a box full of empty whiskey bottles into the kitchen, Ryan set the crate on one of the score of tables that filled the room. It appeared that the base held 1,000 soldiers, and most of them could be fed at the same meal.
I'll be damned. That's beef of some kind. Where did you find it?
Mildred took a sip of the brew from the spoon.
Almost beef. It's boot.
Ryan frowned.
Army boot?
Good lord, no.
Mildred added another handful of tiny brown squares to the pot. The material sank into the brew without a trace, then started to bob to the surface.
Combat boots are mostly plastic and rubber. No nourishment there. I found some dress shoes in the closets. The polish helped keep the leather intact. I scraped off the plastic, that's what makes patent leather shoes so shiny, then cut them into strips, soaked the piece in salt water for a while to soften the material and leach out any lingering polish. Now it's in the pot.
Near the sloshing dishwasher, Jack was using scissors to cut bedsheets into long strips.
Boot. Had worse.
Have you indeed?
Doc placed a fistful of lint-covered cough drops on an empty plate. It was the only edible thing he had found.
I am sincerely sorry to hear it, my friend.
Not really. Being nice.
Christy entered the kitchen and put a cloth bag on the counter.
Got some roots here.
Inside was a scraggly collection of withered brown things as thin as spaghetti.
Roots? Where the hell did you find those?
Mildred took a knife from a wall rack and started to dice the roots into little pieces.
Every officer in the base had some sort of plant on his desk. I pulled out the dead flowers and dug through the soil. Isn't much, but every little bit helps.
Carrying the stringy material to the pot, Christy sprinkled them into the soup and took a whiff.
Fish?
Boot.
Mildred adjusted the electric burner to a lower setting.
Gaia, save us. Any rice or honey?
Christy started randomly opening the cabinets. As long as rice was kept dry, it would last for centuries, and honey never went bad. Ever. It simply became a solid rock-hard mass, but once gently heated, the stuff softened to its usual form and was as delicious as ever.
Not a friggin' tea leaf.
She placed a lid on the pot and moved to the sink for a glass of water. She opened the tap and brown water gushed out to slowly clear into something drinkable.
The larder was vacuumed clean. There wasn't even an empty can in the garbage bin. Nothing but some salt and garlic cloves.
Like garlic. Make everything taste good.
It also goes rancid over time and will kill you. Ptomaine poisoning. I threw it in the toilet.
Just then, J.B. entered the room, maneuvering around the sea of tables as he carried a stack of boxes.
Damn, that smells good. What's for dinner, Millie?
Mildred glanced over his shoulder.
Don't ask.
His smile faded.
That bad, eh?
Never mind the food. Did you find any weapons or grins?
The armorer glumly shook his head.
There was nothing in the armory, or any place else I searched. Not a loose round. Not even empty boxes or plastic wrapping on the floor. However, I found a Webley 44 revolver in the CO's office, plus a nice box of ammo.
Joining him, Ryan scowled at the blaster.
That the one that Silas mentioned?
Yep.
So what's wrong with it?
JB lifted the hand cannon and angled it into the light.
See? The barrel is blocked solid with iron. Pull that trigger and the back blast will remove your arm from the elbow down.
Can you fix it? Melt out the iron?
No way. I plan on placing it in plain sight near the front door, in case anybody comes visiting. Maybe we can get them to shoot themselves.
Ryan lifted a cardboard ammunition box.
Worth a try. What about the ammo? Rigged?
You better believe it. There's no cordite inside those cartridges. They're packed solid with Plas-X. Like loading your blaster with Grenz. Used that trick myself once or twice. It works great. But see here?
He reached into a pocket and withdrew a grayish wad of something that resembled clay.
I took them apart, and now we have half a pound of Plas-X. About 2 grens worth.
All right!
At least it was something. The armorer removed his fedora and placed it on the table.
Not really. Don't have any timing pencils, detonators, or any other way to set off the Plas.
Firecracker. Only made of paper and twine.
And gunpowder. We got none to spare. Doc Slamaw is the only blaster that uses black powder, and it's half of our remaining arsenal.
Needs must, as the devil drives.
Doc drew the massive weapon and put it on the table. He made a gesture to slide it over. JB waved him off.
Thanks, but I'm working on other stuff first. Keep that blaster loaded.
I was thinking.
Christy pulled a chair away from the table and sat down.
Even if we had wags and ammo, how are we going to destroy the kite? We have nothing that can reach the sat in its orbit.
Maybe we can make it crash.
If we can reach the control systems, that's a good plan.
Ryan spread a clean towel on the table and began to disassemble the Steyr. It was filthy with ash, and he wanted the rifle in good shape when they found ammo.
Comp systems are easy to smash. Only one kite, and when the comps are gone, it's useless.
Chilling the sat is easy. Piece of cake. The problem is getting to the base undetected.
While on my sojourn, I chanced to peer in the periscope.
Doc took a chair, pulling off his boots. The man wiggled his toes with obvious pleasure.
The storm seems to be lessening. When it stops, why not simply walk there?
Sliding out the bolt and removing a spring, Ryan scowled.
And get chilled. There's no more trees outside, or bushes to hide behind. We'd be walking over open land in plain sight. Besides, we have less than a dozen live rounds and no usable explosives. They have motorcycles. Maybe another APC.
Don't forget that chopper.
Yeah, we need a law rocket to take out that thing. Otherwise, it'd be a death march.
JB started to clean his scatter gun.
Front gate looked like it could stop a tank, so no use trying there. The stone wall has a gap, but the Blues will station most of their guards there.
Jack was dropping a knife on a whetstone.
Night creep. Steel Segman blasters. Less damn. Better for us.
Too risky. We can't steal webs from the Blues until we go there. And we can't go till we get some more blasters.
Catch 22.
At their questioning looks, Mildred explained.
Pre-dark talk for situations like this. You weren't allowed to leave the war unless you were insane, and if you wanted to go, then you were sane. Asking to leave meant then you had to stay, no matter what. Catch 22.
Ryan slid the bolt home and dry-fired the long blaster. The rifle clicked nice and solid. Find some ammo, and they were ready.
Our best bet is to try the tunnel downstairs.
Christie considered the idea.
Silas did mention the pre-dark government had been digging them. There could be tools in the storage lockers, explosives for the mining, medical supplies, lots of useful things